Welcome to Chill Theater on Kill Radio. It's the 12th of June, but technically last night, the 10th of June, because it's after midnight, you know. The 10th of June was the 20th anniversary of the biggest production that I was ever involved with as a playwright, director, designer. It was called Grindhouse, and we did the final production, final performance at the Douglas Fairbanks Theater off Broadway on 42nd Street. And we had a big house. It ran 4 hours. It was produced by Matt Mittler, and I directed and wrote it. It was originally performed at the Pyramid Club as a serial play in 7 chapters, though I note that the Pyramid sponsored something called Grindhouse a Go-Go back in 2003, but that's not our play. For a few weeks there, at that time, I think we were the hippest thing in New York City, and tonight I'm going to bring back Grindhouse, and we're going to the Pyramid Club. Now, as I examined the things that I did with Grindhouse all those years ago, I see that it was very much a narrative, an exploration of how to present narrative theatrically. I had done a solo piece called Buster Keaton's Walk, and then I had done a solo, a trio piece called Phenomenon, which developed the idea of how to tell narrative stories presentationally. And then I decided, when Matt Mittler, who liked my play Phenomenon a lot, he asked me if I could come up with something else and develop a serial play. And that became Grindhouse, written at the end of 1984 and produced over a 6-month period in 1985. What we're going to hear, what we're listening to right now, is the introductory music to Chapter 1 of Grindhouse. Grindhouse was an attempt to tell a story about the closing of 42nd Street. We knew that 42nd Street, where I had gone to movies endlessly since I had arrived in the city, was going to eventually go away. And all these years later, it is long gone. It's Disney-fied and other stuff today. I haven't been back, but I know that what we were predicting came to pass. So I wanted to do an ode to Grindhouse. I based this on the Visbiansky play, Acropolis, where in the moment of the apocalypse, all these tapestries on the wall of a church in Krakow come to life and retell their tales in the instant of apocalypse. So I decided that the night that the grindhouses would be knocked down by wrecking balls was what the play was about. And I decided to tell the story of a figure from all those exploitation films. A phantom would come to life, and it would be the female presence, and that the kind of lonely guy who ends up on 42nd Street would be the male quotient. And to that end, my friend Gary Schrader played Tom, and B-movie actress Frances Rains played Valerie. In Chapter 1, I'm going to sort of give you the imagery of it as the play progresses so that you can sort of see through the audio what's happening. I think it's interesting, and I think the narratives are peculiar enough and go in so many directions it fits my radio show. So as this music plays in this tiny space at the Pyramid Club, with a stage that is about 4 feet high and about, I don't know, 6 feet deep and maybe 15 feet wide, a group of about 14, 15 people slowly, one at a time, entered the stage during this music and set up a tableau. And when the music ends, there is a group invocation, and that's what we're going to hear. So go back in time. This is March 4th, 1985, at the Pyramid Club, Grindhouse, Chapter 1. I'll be back shortly. The audience was very much into what we were doing. They didn't know what it was going to be.
Perhaps.
Do I show fear?
Do I cause fear?
The Right Reverend Jamin Nguyen's moral guardian for half a century has just ended his life with a pact dedicated to the enemy of all that is life.
And has he hanged himself? In that last moment,
has he a rift opened
cradle and tomb.
Between the cradle of life
and the tomb of death, in that very same moment of non-time,
a secret nuclear explosion.
Rock the foundation, rock the place
beneath this very spot.
A coincidence.
You shudder,
and you would be wrong.
The gates of hell are open
twice,
resonating between the half
and the whole. All is released unassembled.
All is released unassembled. And it begins. Now, the first portion of this is rather cluttered audio-wise, and so I should briefly describe that what you're seeing is, first off, the first thing that happens after the group invocation, Francis, who's standing center, is wearing a robe, takes off her robe, and she's fully nude. And she sits in a chair, and in the background, there are I think, three or four guys and one woman, and they're all in beach wear with bright shirts on and sunglasses, and they've got beach balls. And we're creating a sensation of a beach. And down stage right, to the left of the audience, is a young couple who are coming back from a date. And on the other side of the stage are a man and a woman who are sleeping. They're a husband and wife. The man's wearing pajama bottoms, and the woman's wearing the pajama tops. Eventually, Stacy, a teenager, comes in and sits down and starts talking with the central character, Valerie. Valerie has just come to life. She has just appeared when everything is released unassembled. She doesn't even know who she is. She just finds herself sitting on a beach, surrounded by strange people with scenes happening around her. And she's trying to figure out who she is. To that end, I have one woman who is standing next to her and over her shoulder and is speaking Valerie's thoughts. Valerie doesn't even know her name yet, but this woman is speaking her thoughts, talking about the sensations she's going through. Some of the other characters in the image also will note when characters come on and off, when Stacy appears, and speak again for the characters themselves. I even, in the light booth, bring up a microphone and speak. That's the most embarrassing thing for me about this. So we are getting threads of different narratives going in and out of each other. I hope that that will be clear. Dialogues.
This looks like a nice spot, I think.
Here?
You want to sit here?
On the steps, everybody watching.
Don't worry about them. Why should they care?
Yeah, I know.
Hey, look, we can go somewhere else.
No, this will be fine.
You sure?
Yes.
I mean, we can...
I'm already comfortable.
Good.
Is that what it was?
It's over now. Come back to bed.
I have to cool off. It's so damn hot.
You breathe. You accept the breath. You are one with it. And it is the first definition. You listen to yourself. Breathe. And with that, become aware of your senses. Then you're bathed in awareness. Wind, sand, sound of the waves. Human voices, animal sounds, birds calling, dogs growling, wolves, sweet, stale, mossy, and burning. You open your eyes.
Nice night.
Naturally. It's June.
Yeah.
I mean, don't you expect a nice night in June?
Well, you hope for a nice night.
In June.
Yeah.
I mean, you expect a nice night when it's the end of spring, beginning of summer.
Yeah, I was just saying that this was a nice night.
Oh, yeah.
A beach. This is Valerie. But she doesn't know it yet. Occurred, comprehension has just occurred, beyond comprehension has just occurred, something beyond comprehension has just occurred. She is dazed, as in shock. Look around her, a few people come over shirts, towels, sunglasses, bathing suits. They are phantoms from a teenage beach epic.
Shaking.
Don't worry, I'll be all right.
Is it the same dream?
Isn't it always? I'm back in Fuck Pen in April of 1969. Searching for my men.
Okay, that's Matt Mittler playing a character that we call John Saxon. And his wife is named Luciana. And they are characters that will continue through the story. And that's Tom and Patty on the other side of the stage. And Valerie's at the center. And John Saxon is about to stand up, and he holds up a camping light that flashes yellow colors in his face.
That was a nice dinner, too.
You liked it?
I told you so.
Can I ask you something?
That depends on what it is.
Maybe later, then.
That guilt. You're so full of guilt, but it wasn't
not my fault, I know. But when you have the responsibility of 20 men and they're killed, you don't get over it overnight.
Well, this was 15 years ago.
There's Stacy now. She's this teenager. Rather bratty. A teaser at heart. She treats Harp as though they were best friends.
Your eyes are sensitive, so sensitive, in fact, that the first burst of light has an explosive impact on the cones of your real eyes. Sharp stabs splinter the vision. You squeeze your eyes tight, confronting shimmering mandalas on the inside of your head. Suddenly you're aware of a rustling, close to you, even touching you, the displacement. Bare flesh, nerve-ending, summarizing con.
Coming in out of a cloud in a helichariot, two scouts and I. Eyes trained in the jungle below, each brush, each tree, trying to spot the remains of my command. We'd play the interrogation game with three VC we picked up, take him up in a horse to say 5,000 feet, grab one of the VC, open up the door, and throw him out. Turn to the other two, tell them what we need. Where, we ask of the Yankee prisoners, and then we take VC number two and we throw him out. And the one VC left tells us where we should go to find the men, and we throw him out too, for good measure. Simple, clean, efficient method always gets results.
You don't have to relive it.
But this is exposition. No one will be able to follow us without a setup. Now we're flying in over the village. A rescue squad is what we are. Anxious men unhesitant to risk our lives to rescue our buddies. We come in hard and fast with the sun. It's dawn. Napalm spitting, chicken licking sauce over forest fried gooks. The magnificent trees erupt into columns of flame the horse rides in. I'm first off after the flamethrowers. We split up and blast everything in sight. I catch sight of a little Santan mama screaming on fire, running off to the northeast. She trips, but doesn't just go splattering around. No, she disappears from sight. Intuitively, I know she's fallen into a prisoner pit. Charlie keeps prisoners underground. I bolt toward the pit, narrowly dodging a shit bomb some squeaker flings in my direction, my weapon barking at him and ripping his body into a pile of arms and legs.
How's it work?
I love it. I was so excited between the rabbit cages.
What do I see in the pit? Yeah, I was right. Sampan Mom ended up there, all right. And there are Gandalf and Hoffman, doubled over her body, leaning over it, hands grabbing at her burning flesh. The image burns at me out of my dream. I can see it now.
Open and close your eyes. It'll go away.
They gaze up at me with a mad leer in their eyes. I've never seen anything like it. Blood and fat is dribbling from their smiles and running in saliva down their naked chests. Gandy sits back and yells, "Howdy, Sarge! Join us!" My head is reeling, but this is what we're here for, to rescue them, and I reach out my arm to hoist them out of the pit. Gandy stands up. His fatigues are ripped to shreds. He doesn't even look human.
Honey, don't. I've been waiting for you all day, Candy.
He licks his lips, and he raises his arm toward mine.
Honey!
And the son of a bitch bites my goddamn hand.
Please!
Bites down on it, chomps on it, tries to rip the flesh off my fingers and eat it.
No, little one doesn't need those bad memories now, does he? Give him up, they hurt him. He knows his lady's at hand. Honey, don't burn me. Don't burn me up. Honey, you're here now. There's no war. There's no prisoner pit. There's no Sandpan Mama, no Gandy. All that's left is a dream, a bad dream, honey, that's all. Make it now, make it a good dream. Well, it's almost time for me to go to work. Think about that. I've got to grab my leotard and rush down to the TV studio and do my aerobic show. Picture that. But I'll be back. You can go to sleep now, and I'll be back later.
She looks at Stacy in the eye, but it is as though Stacy isn't looking at her.
I have got something to tell you, for your ears only.
How long have you been a teacher?
About 4 weeks.
And you're right, as usual.
Of course I am.
Now go back to bed. I don't know if I'll sleep.
Try. How odd the multiple layers of perception are. You realize with immediacy that with focus and practice, you can direct your attention to a particular level of perception. For instance, you can isolate the sense, the pressure, your weight against the ground on which you are placed, with that inner sense of the muscular form within your flesh, the skeleton in place.
Maybe later I'll put up the Christmas tree.
4 weeks?
Great. Later we'll celebrate.
I'll bet you tried to call me last night, and my old lady said I was at Sue's.
I used to work as an assistant to an optometrist.
Hey, you don't have to go to work for another half hour.
My.
What do we do with the time then?
Oh yeah, I used to give hearing tests.
Right?
Out in California. Well, actually, I only worked in California proper a couple of times. Once in L.A. and once at Libby's Planet in Linda.
Linda.
California. It's a town. But most of the time, I just spent driving a truck around the Midwest and down south.
Well, I still get my contact lenses for free from the guy I used to work with.
Then you discover memory. But even now, as you sit bathed in thought and attention, you can easily recall that first one.
Okay. These characters are talking around her, and she has not spoken until now. And Valerie speaks. What's happening in the next sequence is that Stacy is talking to Valerie without looking at her, and she is calling her a bunch of different names, referring to her as her best friend, as she tells her a little sex story. John Saxon and his wife Luciana have gone. She's going to be, they're doing what they're doing. So the play is passing into a new mode.
First burst of light.
These are her first words.
Nervous, dreadfully nervous I had been at. I wasn't at Sue's. I was with Bobby on the beach all night.
That echo in your mind?
We did it.
The whole story.
Really? We went all the way.
When you awaken from a bad dream, just open and close your eyes and it will all go away.
You said you lived with the guy?
Jerry.
Jerry, right, for a few years?
7 years.
Didn't work out right?
No, it's good.
Oh.
But why do you say that I am not? You agree with me, don't you, Betty? It was the right thing to do.
The disease has sharpened my senses, not dulled.
Well, it was more my idea than his, admittedly. And I guess I was just using him.
Jerry's the most gentle man I've ever known.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this separation is an experiment.
What, you agreed on it then?
Your eyes seek out through the ravenous crowd for sympathy. You're now subject to emotion.
You can bet your ass he's telling all the other lifeguards in the locker room. That's all right. But it was the right thing to do, wasn't it? Come on, Sal, you're my best friend. I need your support.
The color, the thought, the silence of the heartbeat in the little room.
Well, I guess you could say I tricked the pants off him.
Sure, of course we agreed on it. What'd you think?
I don't know. I wasn't thinking.
Me more than him, though, to be honest.
Oh, yeah?
And now, in your concentration, you are being. Being with lungs and heart, the unbelievable flutter of the inside, and you know that beside you is another being, not just the idea of a being.
See, Bobby's been out with Vic drinking beer on the boardwalk before he met me.
Your quotient of excitement.
He wasn't drunk or anything. Well, maybe a little. We got on our bathing suits. You haven't seen my new suit. Pretty foxy, huh? The woman at the store told me it was too small, my butt was hanging out. Pretty cool, huh? $26 at Plumarian. Bobby liked it. Anyway, the sun was starting to go down. It was 8:39.226. And we were walking out on Grover's Point, and Bobby kept on excusing himself, saying, I got a kiss, and then he'd run around the rocks.
You know how it is. After a while, after years, I guess, it all seems to fall in a pattern. The job, Jerry, our friends, our parents, the dog. A pattern. I have it. I know it's something that starts out as a good thing. It's something you need, but then it becomes, I don't know, something else.
Yeah. Start wanting to see past it.
Yeah, I guess. Before I met Jerry, I used to be a really different person.
How so?
Just different. You're amazed by the bright alchemical power of language.
Whole other worlds are embedded in tightly packed
freezes time bombs of essential energy that help you grasp, confront concepts beyond your individual mind.
How old were you when you first started living with Jared?
22.
7 years is supposed to be a cycle. It makes sense.
Yeah, I thought about it for a long time, but then one day after a disagreement, I just quit my job and moved out.
Good.
But then right after that, Jared had some business out west, so he arranged for me to have the apartment, and he moved out.
So you're living in the same apartment you were with him?
Yeah.
Now, I've been in this position with guys just too damn much. They get scared. And most of my friends have already had abortions. So I was determined to get them this time.
Assumptions of earnest.
Exactly. So once, when you started going towards the rocks, I said, hold it, Buster.
But, you know, it's not over yet.
No. Your blinks take on a staccato rhythm. Like a camera shutter.
Oh, Jesse, he was so embarrassed. You should have seen him. This big half grin stuck on his face. And I said, if you have to do it here. And I held out my hands like a cup. And I said again, here. And that's all I got to see his cock! You don't think I was overly anxious, do you? I never knew he looked so skinny with his trunks off.
Not at all. I'm pretty sure we'll get married. Jerry and I.
Where am I?
I wouldn't ask you questions like that.
How did I get here?
You've analyzed your position. It's sensitive. But selection is important to your role. Don't be passive. The breath has led to emotion. And emotion is involved. Wait a second there, Stella. I am confiding in you the most intimate event of my life.
I don't remember how I got here.
You're a vulgar bitch, that's what you are.
I think I need help.
God, I thought you were my fucking best friend. What a fool I've been.
Please,
stop it.
Is this a date?
This?
Yeah, what we're doing. Dinner, this walk.
You and I.
Yeah, tonight.
Well, we're acting in the same play.
Sure.
This is a friendly date with a new friend.
So that means we couldn't go back to your place or to my place for the night.
No! You mean, no!
Don't be offended. I mean, there's nothing wrong with
no,
asking.
No, there's nothing wrong. No, I just...
So that...
Stacy exits, fuming. Look at her fume. She watches her leave, puzzled. The other, she smiles. Look at her smile. She drifts off silently as she watches her go. Then she slowly rises, moving cautiously in her body. She eventually turns to the back wall, touches it, looks at the lights above her head.
And alone on stage now, Francis stands up, still nude, and does walk around the stage. And what had been a beach has changed. And she walks up to the edge of the stage and says to the audience, and a detective in a trench coat appears.
Closed at sundown.
It's not a beach, it's a stage.
It doesn't matter, ma'am, it's closed.
Officer, can you help me?
That's what I'm here for, ma'am. To protect and serve, or molest and destroy, depending upon the scenario, but we'll have to move along.
This won't make any sense. But I don't remember how I got here.
Visually, what's happening is there are people at their feet holding up white lamps, spots, tiny spots. And so as each person speaks, they have a light on them. The other one is in black. And so it flashes back and forth with each line, the light changing.
Sounds like big trouble. What do you mean by that?
I just woke up here.
You've got any identification?
No.
You should always carry identification. Okay. Who are you?
I'm not sure.
Eh?
I can't remember my name.
What?
Well, once it was Barbara and another time Tracy.
Was Barbara Tracy?
No. I mean, once I was called Barbara, I think, and then another time Tracy. And not too long ago, I was Amy and Janie and Rhoda and Maria.
Amnesia, huh?
I don't remember.
No last name either.
I think I don't have one. Officer, I'm not kidding. My memory's really foggy. Look, I can tell you I think I'm a journalist. A reporter. Freelance in New York, Rome, the Amazon. I've investigated cannibal tribes. I've gone undercover in a women's prison. And I flew to the Arctic to recover dinosaur tracks.
Now look, I'm not trying to be tough with you, but I do have to be frank. You see, this beach is dangerous. Why, more than 20 people have disappeared since noon today. First, it was the hot dog vendor. Witnesses say he was calling out, "Red Hots, get your Red Hots, yay!" And he was gone. Nobody saw him go, he just went. Next, it was the Spielberg kid. You know that obnoxious, blonde, blue-eyed brat you always see running across the beach? He was yelling, "Mommy, look at the funny marble." Oops! Next, it was three stone beach buddies. Jiggle, jiggle, what? We found one bikini top, and that was it. So they pulled martial law with a curfew to torture on sight. So my advice to you is, beat it.
But, officer...
No, Butts. Hey, look, I'm being lenient with you. Now get lost before I strap you to a sliding door.
And off he goes, and music begins, a drum beat begins, and the lights change, and Valerie begins to go into a sort of cubist dance, a sort of move where her parts of her body change direction, and she begins to speak. And in this moment, when a light like a projector hits her, she learns her name.
Did you see the Post headline today? Cannibals eat IRT passengers. You, spectator, what sees? What is seen? The poignancy of the image of me? Even now, watching you, watching me, I think. This is a predicament. I haven't eaten. But I'm not hungry. I feel rested, but I've not slept. It's like a light switch. It's not like a light switch. The soundtrack isn't on. Like Nick, you know? Trouble now. Trouble. This dance is going to make me play. Ah!
you, laughing or raining.
Wait a minute. What's my name? Valerie. I am Valerie. Why am I Valerie? Why not another name? Who is Valerie? Who were those people? Somebody's dreaming. And won't they feel ashamed when they wake up? I resent this.
You're real, all right.
Am I?
Think about it.
Oh.
You can tell.
I think in terms of scenes.
No. I think in terms of scenes.
That was me, of course, talking just as a voice to her. And this strange, small man with a fake white beard that hangs to his waist appears. And they sit down on the steps at the edge of the stage and talk.
In the grindhouse, of course.
Cold.
Well, you're not wearing any clothes.
What am I doing here?
That remains to be seen. Don't fret. It all comes out clear sometime.
Who are you?
I'm Carl the Projectionist. Projection and card and everything.
Carl, What's going on?
It's hard to tell. I just started. Something weird, no doubt. But don't you worry about the phantoms. You just have to go through the image.
Go through the image.
Sure, you go all the way through the image. You come out somewhere else. It's all up to you. Don't forget, you're the star. The others are jealous of you.
Who?
You'll see. It'll have something to do with whether the image is real or whether the image is real. Look, see? The scene's changing.
Yeah.
It'll give you some time to think on it.
And Valerie and Carl disappear, and John Saxon appears, and he's in his backyard, and he's flying a model airplane, and Stacy, who's like 15 years old, comes in behind him.
Did
you pull a muscle?
It must be from cheerleading practice. God, it hurts.
Why don't you stand up?
Oh, I can't.
Stacy, come on.
It hurts.
It'll be all right.
It hurts.
Just stand on it. It'll be okay.
Dr. Miller says it has to be massaged.
It doesn't feel tight. It's bothering your mother.
No. Just rub it. It feels better.
Just a little.
Do you think I have nice legs? It feels good. That's great. You bit me. To be continued.
So Grindhouse ends chapter one with nudity and oral sex with a teenager and mysterious psychology, and the opening text of the invocation comes from André Breton's Nadia, and the first lines that Valerie speaks is Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart. Because she's not even herself yet. She's reference. All she is reference. True, she says. Nervous, dreadfully nervous. I had been and am. But why will you say that I am mad? The disease has sharpened my senses. Those are her first words. And you're listening to killradio.org in Los Angeles. And this is a chill theater. That was chapter one of my play Grindhouse, which I'm playing as an ode to the fact that last night, or Friday night, June 10th, was the 20th anniversary of the final performance of Grindhouse, the entire work. Tonight I'm sharing chapter one.